Hello, I'm Somi Aryan. I'm the founder of the think tank for women in business and technology and the FemPeak platform with the mission of raising women's socioeconomic status. Would you agree that women often have to do more with less? Well, it certainly seems that way in the startup world where only a fraction of the venture capital investment goes to women. And that's what we are going to talk about in today's podcast with our guest. Kobe Flynn is a multi-award-winning innovation marketer who has launched over 30 brands from incubator to national and global launch. She is the global vice president of United Mid Campus, where she replaced classrooms with project incubators. These are dynamic co-working spaces where students work on real industry projects. Kobe mentors innovators at multinational corporations and startups, and she argues that women in business do more with less. Although this makes women resourceful, it's time to give them the opportunities that will enable them to operate at a much higher scale. So here's my conversation with Kobe Flynn.
You were on the panel, and I feel like with everybody that's been on the panel, you know, it's like everybody has got such a strong story, such a strong, you know, background, and in a way, I don't get a chance to really get to know them properly. So this is my chance to actually have a chat with you more and like get to know you better. So with that in mind, I was wondering if you could, you know, take me back to the beginning. How did you get to know about the think tank? Was it one of our outreach emails that, you know, we send out to people saying that we're doing this, would you like to join the initiative? Was it like that?
It was from one of your, I think, your first outreach emails in August. Yes, okay. So that's why I'm so excited by how much you've done. It's wonderful to be a part of, but I think it's like most wonderful to watch you do it. You do show it as an ease, and I think that's your passion, that's what drives you, is your passion for it. And they're just such important conversations to be having. Like, your mission of getting women into that 1% is the only way we can do that is by having these conversations, because as we see in each one of the awesome conferences you're putting together.
On our wall, we have three little stickers, and the stickers have our three values, and the first one is actually speed. So it's like speed is one of our company values. So speed, transparency, curiosity. People don't see the behind the scenes of what goes into this, you know, and this whole thing came out of a breakup for me. I felt like I was put in a position where I had to choose between the relationship and my mission, my goal. I don't call it a career, because this is so much more than a career for me, it's a calling. And I felt that so many women have to make that choice. In society, it's much more accepted for a man to pursue a career goal, or, you know, building a corporation, company. The structure of society is not built in a way to allow that and to encourage that. So I wanted to change that.
I mean, we've just met, but I've watched you from afar for the last 3 months. And I would like you to think about yourself perhaps in a different way to frame yourself. I don't think that you're stubborn. I think that you're driven. And I think like that's something we can do that's easy for us to do, is like, that's a word that's assigned to a woman. I rarely hear that word assigned to a man in a workplace environment. They do not say like, oh, they're so stubborn, watch out for this. Like, that's not something that comes up. But they will say that about women. And normally when I hear that, I think to myself, okay, like, what does that person really mean? And with women, I don't find them stubborn. You know, stubborn means like,
yeah,
you're stuck and you're not going to look at all of the options. And like, where can you go and what are your opportunities? From that very short intro that you've given me on your background, like, it seems as all you are doing is looking at like, what are my opportunities? I may not know what all of them are, but what are some of them?
Yes, so yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly. I was like, you know, I don't accept, you know, I just won't accept that my options that are provided to me or presented to me by the universe at this moment is the only thing. I'm sure there is more. And if there isn't more, I will bulldoze my way
right
to create more. Have you not noticed, Kobe, that there's another term that I feel doesn't really get used about women that much, like, and that's brilliant. I noticed people saying that quite a lot in a business environment when they're talking about male. I don't see it used as much for women. I don't know if, like, I do really think, I think that it's, there's something about the vocabulary that we use about women and men, you know, like if a woman is a go-getter, we would often people say, oh, she's like, she's trying to be too masculine, or she's like, she's trying too hard, or whereas with men, they're like, it's natural. A lot of research is showing that the vocabulary used in job descriptions seems to put a lot of women off from applying for those jobs, because those terminologies are things that when used about a woman feels like a negative thing, especially in sales and you know, areas where you need that kind of person that's going to come in and close that sale or that, you know. What's your experience with that?
My business is not in, you know, women in business, right? That is not actually my field. I'm in innovation and I make people and businesses a lot of money by identifying for them what are their opportunities. And sometimes it's blind spots also. That's what I do. I look at data all the time. I'm analyzing opportunities. I'm looking at sales figures. So exactly what you're saying, that's really interesting about the that you're finding that it's actually the words that are turning people off. In my experience, it's the fact that we drill into women society-wise, and I have like I work in the US, but also in Europe. And so I can speak to those too, that we drive into them that they have to be qualified. So I think what happens to a lot of women is they read those job descriptions and they think to themselves, oh, I don't have this exact experience. Where men read job descriptions and they see, oh, I have some transferable skills. I've never done any of these things, not one single item that is on the list, but I have some transferable skills from another job I did, or I could do it. So that's the part for me that's always shows up, like over and over and over. So you hire a woman gets a job, she applies for a job. And once she's in there, they even then won't give her a position. So that was kind of what I think you responded to when I first wrote you about the conference, is what I see over and over is I see women do more with less. And they do more with less because they're only given a little bit. And that part to me is almost fine. I believe in a meritocracy. Like I do believe that everyone should be able to prove their worth and prove the work that they're doing. So they'll be given like, oh, we'll give her a small account. Let's see if she can make it profitable. Oh, we'll give her a small brand. Let's see if she can bring that brand that is dying back to life. She has no money. She has no budget to do that on, but she does it. Because maybe no one's paying attention to her and she knows just to keep her job. And I think that's another difference, yeah. Right? It's like, I have to keep my job. Not only do I have to keep my job, I have to overperform if I hope to one day be promoted, not my guaranteed yearly promotion that we see that men track at. Like they're always getting promoted even if they didn't meet any of the deliverables.
As somebody who comes from a very oppressive society. One thing I found was that if you wait for opportunities to be given to you, you'll be waiting a long time. It's going to be very difficult to change the entire mindset of corporations and governments and all that stuff. And of course, we are doing these conferences, we're talking about all of these things to make those things happen. But in the meantime, there's a lot that women themselves can do, right? And what can we do to change maybe the way that, like, change something in our brain in the sense of, like, say, you know what, I'm not going to take everything they say about qualifications here literally, you know, that I do have those transferable skills. I'm sitting on a mountain of information and data and knowledge. I just need to have more self-belief in the sense of go out there. And what's the worst thing that can happen? I won't get it, right? to this date, you know, since we started this movement in back in July till now, we haven't had a single, no sponsorship, no money from outside. Everything, I'm paying for it myself. I've got a team of people, you know, I'm just, this is my investment. And this is a business. You know, people always think that when a woman does something like that, they're like, oh, is it like a nonprofit? No, it's not a nonprofit. I said from start, the think tank will always be free. The conferences will always be free. That's like our opening a conversation. I want that part to be always free. But for us to build a platform that is going to enable raising investment for female entrepreneurs, connecting female entrepreneurs to investors, to build an infrastructure for learning, for education, that needs money. And that money has to come from somewhere. So it has to become a membership platform eventually so that we can generate the funds for it to pay for itself so that it can grow. It's okay if you get rejected, if you get criticized, and just keep going. And I find that that's hard, right? It's difficult. I mean, I wish I could share that drive with everybody, or, you know, like maybe I have a very thick skin. Maybe it's the fact that I was born during war, you know?
I think what you're saying, that is, right, that's the resilience part of it that we do have to pass on, because I think women do go on a lot of interviews, and I think they do apply for a lot of things, and I think they're rejected all the time. It's a little bit more about, okay, so what? Like, find another one. Which is, I think that part is very, very hard, because if you are rejected 15 times, it's hard to then go for the 16th. When we're talking about what are the solutions, I think that comes around to coaching, because it's not just that part of like the resilience of still showing up and showing up and showing up, because for women, it's not a numbers game. For men, it is a numbers game. They can apply 100 and, you know, eventually they'll get the job. That may not be true for a woman, because she may not be speaking the same language that the hiring committee is speaking, or she may not be speaking the same language of what the business needs are. You said we kind of have to accept where we are right now. We do want to move forward. We want to move to a place where everything is equal, but we're not even at a 30% mark yet. You're right. It should not be this way, but it is this way. I think the things that women can do to help other women is, and there are so many of them, right? There are so many mentorship programs. There are so many, like, let me look at your resume for you. And you see women give back more than you do other people, because they do want to like reach an arm back and like pull you up with you. Like, you climb the ladder, I'm gonna get you. But sometimes it's not us, right? Like, sometimes it's not us that can pull you up. So I think that you, in both like when you're applying for a position, but also within companies, if I'm a company, the advice I'm giving is the sponsorship within the company itself. So if men are what makes up the majority of your executives, my advice to a woman that's working there that hasn't been promoted over 10 years and should have been promoted, say, at year two, is she has to identify who her audience is. Like, why is she not being promoted? And she has to find someone on that executive team that will tell her honestly. You know, we're not honest. So part of it is communication. Part of it is like when we're talking about what are those solutions, what do they look like? And I was saying, we can truly see, if you look at Fortune 500 companies and the teams that are managed by women are on average have 20% more patents than teams that are managed by men. We see in a Fortune 500, that's where everyone is supported, right? Like, I'm not saying it's perfect there. They're definitely not promoting the way they should be, but that's kind of our ideal, because they have the funding, they have the time, and they have the ability. So in those companies, you see mentorship programs that are in place. Those types of trainings or those types of programs are what's so important and are pretty easy to do at a small business as well, because it's something you always want to be thinking about. Who can I bring up? Who can I move up? Who can I, like, because of course, even in your company, you need good talent. You need them to move up. You need them to maybe do some of the podcasts you're doing, you know, as you start to grow.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I pretty much exclusively hire women, and the girls start usually that come in at about 23, and then they learn so much because I give them so many responsibilities. You know, so like there's been times where for example, one of my colleagues, Elizabeth, she was like, you know, I've never done this. Like, I was asking her to go on a shoot by herself and, you know, and manage another camera person. And she was like, this is so much responsibility for me. And I was like, look, I'm giving you permission to fail. I want you to go and do it. You know, and I'm telling you, I will not tell you off if you fuck up, because I want you to go out there. I'm taking that responsibility. I'm telling you, it's okay to fail, you know, because there's no other way you're going to learn. On the one hand, they're grateful that they have that opportunity to go and fail, but on the other hand, they will do everything in their power not to fail. We need more companies run by women so that they give that opportunity to other women. The entire team of building the new website is all going to be women. I feel like if I could build a really large tech company, right, think like Facebook, even if there aren't enough talent, I will actually bring people in and put them through training and like give them a contract, say like, I will pay for your training, but I want you to promise that you will be here for at least 5 years to because then that will be like me making that money back. But I'm willing to do that, you know, and looking at every possibility, sponsorships, grants, so that I can actually bring the funds to thousands of women that I will put them through these kinds of training. But the world is run by 10 corporations, and those 10 corporations are founded by men and run by men. And I think that's a dangerous thing, because I think that we are basically, because those 10 corporations are deciding the direction of humanity, and there is not a single woman part of that process as a founder, at the founder level. We don't have a female Elon Musk, we don't have a female, you know, Jeff Bezos, Zuckerberg, you know. That needs to change. Like, we need more females starting tech corporations, tech companies, and building it at a large scale and bringing in more women and giving them those opportunities.
I guess one, because when we were talking about what are the solutions and what are the things to look out for, I would also say in startups, what I see pretty frequently is even when you have a mixed founder team, right? Like we were talking about during the conference that in the US, 3% of the funding is going to women. Startup funding, which is, it's a huge number in the United States, it's $3.5 billion. Well, it's still only 3%. That's how you start to know just how large the startup and scale-up world is, like how much money is out there. $3.5 billion is like an entire industry, but it's still only 3% are going to women founders. Within startups, where I think it's important, especially a lot of the things what you were talking about, is you don't usually have women at the top. So when you're bringing women in, which is a huge risk, I think for women going to startups, it's a huge risk, because the reason they want to go to corporations or small businesses is because it's a guaranteed income and they know exactly how much they're going to make, and they have families to take care of. You know, they have children to take care of. But some things that I can just say, like, to watch out for if you are a woman that's willing to take that risk is for yourself. If you have no one that's a woman in the top to talk to, you got to find that guy. You got to find that guy that's in that founder core that is hiring you to talk to about your deal, because your deal is not going to be the same as the guy that's sitting next to you. He is getting better terms. And unless you're lucky enough to find a company like yours, which we've just established are very far and few between, that you're hiring all women, you know, or a majority of women, you know, you are looking out for that deal. What I try to do is I try to make sure when I come in, I try to look at all the qualifications, and I want to make sure that if the woman that's just been hired is not making the same amount of money as her colleague, that her equity deal is better. Because what she can do in the next company she goes to is she can say, this is, you know, she can take her overall deal and say, this is what I was worth. Because really what's happening when we're talking about pay scale and we're talking about, you know, equity, gender equity, it's so much more than just pay. And why do men have that ability to make so much more money than women do over their career? I see the problems to be the same almost, because they are always like, business is business and it's run the same way.
The thing is, like, sometimes women will never ask for it. So if somebody doesn't look out for you, you may miss out on possibilities and things that you could be earning. For example, Lola, who is like my right hand. So basically, Lola has been with me for over 2 years now. And one thing I've done, I'm literally paralyzed without her. I don't know what to do without her. Like, if she's not in my life one day, I don't know what to do. So, and I know that she's worth her weight in gold. And I don't have that money to pay her for the amount of money that I think she's worth. You know, if she was working in a corporation, she would be worth maybe 3-4 times what I'm paying her. So what I did for her, I was like, I was investing in one of our clients' company. So I invested on her behalf. And those are like gestures that you can do. I was like, what I'm investing for you now, it doesn't seem much now, but by the time they exit, that could be the deposit, yes, of a house for you. And I know that right now I'm not able to pay you as much as I feel like you're worth. And I don't pay myself that much. You know, nobody gets paid that much because we all understand we're building something, yeah, and we are reinvesting the money into building this kind of thing. So whatever I can't pay people in terms of salary, I pay them in other forms. I make sure that people are taken care of. I take them out. I really care about their day-to-day well-being. You know, like, these are things we can do to build more female-led corporations, even if we don't have the money. I think it's about that part of resourcefulness is about creating strong bonds with female employees. I don't even like that term, employee. When I refer to them, I would say my colleagues, yeah, you know. We are building something together. If we are in this together, and if this doesn't work out, we are all going to fail, you know, together. So we need to push this ship together. Yeah. Women have a way of the ability to for that communication. If we have like hundreds of and thousands of new female startups and they all hire 5-10, you know, women and give them some level of either equity or some form of making it worth their while to stick around, in the next 5 years, we will be in a better position. So you are in innovation, right? So you help companies innovate. So tell me about that. So one of the things that I am very passionate about is the idea of innovating and creating new industries that are more female friendly and women can bring more to the table. Where are some areas that you see that we can innovate to create new industries that need more women? Because you know that a lot of industries now are becoming obsolete because of technology.
Okay, so I work across, because lots of times people ask, what is innovation, right? I work across anything that's a new-to-world product, any new technology, any line extension. So that is often considered an innovation off of your base brand. And then with any like new technology that would be with like the larger corporations. And then with startups and scale ups, it's really like anything that's new. So a new way of educating, a new way of doing data analytics or anything like that. I think there's so much opportunity that currently exists.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So
I agree.
For me, when, that's kind of why I just keep coming back over and over again to like, you know, women are already doing these things. So there's food science, there's data science. Like, I don't think there's any one industry that's more female than male. I am always trying to be mindful of that, because when we're talking about startup funding, the reasons that men say they don't invest, or, you know, one, it's like, oh, we invest in who we know, and there aren't a lot of women that are investing. Two, it's an industry that only women know about, and they will cite the beauty industry. This is a ridiculous thing to say, because our beauty industry in the U.S. was started by a man. Like, you know, like the main players that have been around since like 1900 were started by men. So we can't say like beauty is only women. And what was their insight? The reason they took off, they were originally working on creams. But then we had the Great Depression in the U.S. We had a stock market crash. Their learning was women will pay for lipstick because it's the one luxury they're still allowed when they have nothing else. So that was in like 1930, right? So when people say things to me like, oh, you know, it's a beauty industry, so we're men and we don't know anything about that. Like, I like to go back and show all, I mean, here we are. Everything was run by men up until, you know, the last 100 years or even the last 50 years.
Yeah, when I say we need new industries that are more female friendly. I don't necessarily mean more like beauty or cosmetic. Maybe I put it the wrong way. It's not so much about the whole industry being more female friendly, but more like a female perspective that could bring something to any almost industry that would make it more unique, accessible, different, that maybe that same result couldn't have been achieved if men were in the driving seat.
I know exactly what you're saying. I guess that's that diverse, right? When we're talking about what's the diverse viewpoint. When I was first starting in, I was in innovation in beverage. And when I came in, all of our consumer targeting, our consumer target was a man for every single beverage we worked on. And I was curious. I asked, like, well, why are we only targeting men? Because if you've been to a bar, like, women order drinks, you know? And the answer is they don't spend as much as men do. And as a woman, okay, I had to remind them that, well, okay, if you're saying men are buying two times the amount of drinks women are, it's because they're buying them for women. If I'm the woman, I'm telling the man what to order for me in most cases. In that way, women are always bringing a different viewpoint, right? Because in the sense that, like, everyone brings a different viewpoint. If you are from your cultural background all the way through to where you live, even, you know, could just be like, oh, I live in this part of the country, which is completely different. And these are the types of things I see in the market or the things that people buy in the marketplace. So I guess I do still always just come back to, for me, the answer is you just hire more women, you know, right? Like that's
So that you have that diverse point of view. Yeah. So can you tell me and then people listening, how does somebody go into the line of work that you are in? Like, I think it's so fascinating to say, like, how do you describe? You would say that you're an innovation. Tell me how do you describe what you do?
So for the majority of my career, it was specifically an innovation marketer. So I was marketing the products. Like, I am not the food scientist that's creating the new liquid, but I am telling you if it's a viable product or not for the marketplace. What's interesting is when you work at a very large corporation, you essentially learn what it's like to run the entire business because you're focusing on brand health, you're focusing on the bottom line, you have to measure a P&L. So it's a very interesting talk about on-the-job learning. Like, you are learning things that when you go to a smaller company, they don't think about when you're talking about marketing anyway. You know, they may think that it's just, it's not an overall complete company strategy, which is what we do in larger companies. In small companies, it's very interesting too, because the big guys at the Fortune 500s, they look constantly. So there's two ways to approach innovation is they like to make in-house and they have an entire department devoted to that. And then they have another department that is constantly looking for what can they buy. And I think that is changing a little bit if we're talking about technology, and perhaps maybe that's where the concern should be if we're talking about like what's happening with Facebook, the way he is always trying to buy. The kind of innovation I worked on is you buy a company, you bring them in-house. Because whatever they learned, whatever their insight was to that market opportunity, the liquid they created, you bring them in-house and they still have a say over the product. You know, it's not like, oh, we bought it and that's it. So large companies then help you scale the business because they have the infrastructure. I do see that like symbiosis, it's available, is when you are small and you've created something and like you are talking about, you are like blood, sweat, and tears putting that in that, like, you got to make this happen. Everyone's on the ship pulling their own weight, you know, and you're not making enough money. You're not making enough money to live or to sustain it. So you do look for that larger company to buy you because of the infrastructure that's available, you know, of what's there, the resources that are there and how they can support you and help you.
But I think that even in that sense, like, I personally would be like, no, don't go down that route, you know, as long as possible to try and build it from scratch and like be happy with making less, but grow it from the ground up. Because when you sell, what happens basically is that they will buy you and then they will change the ethos and then the ethos is lost.
It's so interesting, Somi, that you just said that, because that's what I find is a difference between men and women as they're growing the product. And
yes,
it will depend on your who's going to buy you, obviously, right? And what they're going to offer to you and who they are as a company, because lots of companies buy and they get rid of you, and they, like, not only do they completely change your ethos, I was working on a technology, they killed all of the, like, brilliance that was in that technology that had a billion people using it. And when it was acquired, the company acquired it just to kill it, to, like, you know, just strip
exactly.
it and use
exactly.
some certain, like, items.
Exactly.
But to one, like, when you talk to men about in startups and getting that financing, the only thing they talk about is the exit.
Like, what I'm doing is more, unless I get bored with it, you know, I wouldn't sell it. If I sell it, it would be with the view of, I'm going to take that money and make something even
yes.
bigger. You know, because this, for me, this, what I'm trying to do here, and I'm not, I don't mean just with FemTalent. My goal is to have female Bill Gates. That's what I want, right? And the way I see it is that if it doesn't happen in my generation, then I would be a stepping stone for the next generations. If it happens in my generation, you know, I'm going to make a run for it. And if I don't get to the sun, even if I get to the moon, then the next woman can come and step on my shoulder and get to the sun, right? I want equality at the top tier. Bill Gates, Elon Musk, Zuckerberg, Larry Page, Sergey Brin, female version of these. I will not accept anything less than that. That's what I want, right? For me, it's not a matter of making a few millions or even like a billion, because I could be sitting in a private jet with my little laptop working, you know? Like, I enjoy the right. game. I always compare myself, I explain to people, I'm like an Olympic athlete and I'm training for the game of my life. If you just come and give me a gold medal, that means nothing. No, I want to run. I want the blister. I want that journey. I want that game. And I think there is a level of feeling of achievement and growth that comes with it that I think women are deprived from, you know, for centuries. And if somebody asks me, like, what is the meaning of life for you? The meaning of life for me is the experiences that we create. And by depriving half of humanity from a certain kind of potential experience, you know, with like that sense of growth and intellectual, you know, imagine if we were living in a society where women could not compete in the Olympics. Well, there is such a society where I grew up. I know that feeling. I know what it feels like. Like, I did gymnastics growing up, right? And I know what it feels like that by the time you're 14, you know that you're like, you have no career, you have no place, you're not going to be ever able to wear the same dress, the same, you know, outfit as the American and the Russian gymnasts, and you're never going to be competing in Olympic. That experience is taken away from you forever. And I feel that we are doing the same thing for women, to women in business and in politics and in economy and in so many areas, not by banning them, but by silencing
yeah.
them. And that is a problem, you know, and I want to change that. I know the feeling of not being allowed, you know, like women are not even allowed to in Iran, like to go into the a stadium to watch football. Because I grew up in an environment where I know what it feels like to be taken an opportunity
yeah.
from you, a human experience, to take that away from a woman, you know. And I feel like when I came to the West, I felt like that still exists.
It does.
Except that maybe not to that degree, and maybe not but you look at the fact that how we celebrate male football, right? The amount of money that is poured into men's football, in men's basketball, you know, which female industry, which female sports is making as much money as, like, say, male football?
I want to preface this by, once you start talking about global economics of any kind, you start to sound like a conspiracy theorist. So I just want to, like, preface it with that. I guess that's the other thing I always try to remind people is where we are currently. We are ruled by money. Yeah. If you want to take the example you just gave, even if we take TED Talks as an example, we show, you see how much money a ticket costs to a regular TED Talk versus TED Women. And it's for two reasons, right? The one reason is women don't have as much money to spend. That's like number one. We don't have as much money to spend because we're not paid as much, because we don't have the same job title, because that broken rung, we didn't make it to manager, but we should have 10 years ago. So that's part of it, is they know there's just not that much money in those women-only products, let's call it. So that's what they'll tell you, right? So we know, well, there's a reason women can't spend that much. But instead of like, what's the reason for it? People will just tell you, oh, well, you, like, same as when I started in spirits, right? Where they're telling you, like, oh, well, you know, the men are the ones buying two times the drinks. It's like, yes, well, that's because, one, women don't have as much money, but also, you know, like, there are all of these reasons in there. So we do dump all of this money, obscene amounts of money, into men's sports, into NBA, into soccer, into football. But that's who sells the tickets. It's not necessarily the TV rights that are making the money. It's the merchandise that's making the money.
And I don't think it will be anytime soon that you will see men walking around with the female football team's jersey, right?
I don't necessarily think that men wouldn't want to watch like female sports or wouldn't want to wear the jersey, say. But like what you said, we don't pour the marketing dollars into it. So it's this like catch 22. Yes. It's like, we don't pour the marketing dollars because we don't see the return on investment.
I think the only solution is we need more female starters. Until you have a female head of Fed Confederation of this and that, if I'm there, I'd be like, fuck this. We need to put more money into the women's thing. Put all the marketing into it, you know. I want to see men wearing women's jersey. We need to change that mindset. I actually posted something on LinkedIn. I mentioned a new study by a London City University has said it has shown that men are secretly unhappy where their partners get a pay rise. Just so much psychological thing involved there. And I'm going to give you one more example. You know, when I came to the UK, I started a band. Many people don't know about it, but I was actually in a death metal band for 4 years. And I was on the back cover of Metal Hammer magazine, played to like 2,000 people in Germany. So it was actually doing pretty well. And it was something that I was very passionate about at the time. I feel like I'm not angry anymore, so I don't do it, because it was like screaming and, you know, all that stuff. One thing I noticed was that until I started my own band, I didn't listen to female-fronted heavy metal bands. Death metal, heavy metal, thrash metal, it was a male thing. And almost every band that I listened to, you know, were male fronted. And I didn't really dig that kind of operatic singing. I liked the heavy, like growling stuff. And it was mostly men. So I never really took seriously female heavy metal or death metal until I started my own band. And that was when I was like, suddenly I expected people to come to my gigs, and I wanted men to wear my t-shirt, my band's t-shirt, right? And women, and I started to have women. And I was like, wow, like I've been so ignorant, right? And then I started to listen to female-fronted bands. And now my probably most favorite all-time female-fronted metal band is in this moment, Maria Brink, who's the singer and songwriter. I'm definitely going to have her on the think tank one day when we have one about music or arts. And it's like, she's, you know, she's one of the most talented people I've ever seen. But I would have never taken her seriously, or maybe I would have never even become aware of her had I not done that. So the only way we are going to change that balance is by having more women doing those things.
The one thing I would say, because I did read your email and I tried to, I could only find the Yahoo write-up, so I could only find small statistics of it. I would love to read the full study, and I don't know if they looked into it, but what was interesting for me is, why do those men feel that way? And, right, it was like 18%. It's not everyone, thank God, right? So, but still, in that 18%, why do they feel that way? Like, my thesis would be that, well, they feel that way because in a woman getting an increase in pay, well, those men know that that means she's working more hours. She's not working less. So, and she knows she's going to be away from the family more. She knows she's going to be away from home more. Her attention is going to be more divided. And that's another piece of this puzzle that we deal with as women do move up the ladder. The reason, and I keep going back to, like, women do more with less. You know, they're expected to have all of this experience in order to get promoted. Well, the only way you get all that experience is by coming in early, leaving late, coming in on a Saturday to make sure finance is correct. Like, so you're working 6 days a week while your male counterpart is working from 9 to 5. A second 5 o'clock hits, he's out the door, and he does not come in on Saturday to make sure that the budget is correct. I think there's a piece of that. If there are these men that are reporting that and feeling that way, that's where I would go. Because I know in a lot of relationships that happen is like the distribution, you know, distribution of work. Even that woman getting that promotion, getting that funding, that raise, it may still only be half of what her husband makes. So now her husband is like, okay, yeah, she's making more money. She's not going to be home. And it's only half of what I make. So what, like, so it would be really interesting for me to like really dig in, because I think that's where some of those problems that we don't address, right? We don't address why that man is upset. He's upset because of this like raw deal his wife is getting. You know, it may not just be about the money.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, there's something interesting in that. Even if you choose not to have children, like in my case, I was like, okay, I'm going to go out with somebody who has children, so that I'm not going to want children, so it's going to be fine. But actually, even then, it still wasn't fine, because then it was like, okay, it's like half term, we need to go on holiday, and like I'm expected to go. I'm like, this is my high season, you know, I'm like, bang in the middle of October, I'm very busy, I can't do it, you know. Even if you make that, you know, decision or sacrifice to not have children, to do things like that, it's still difficult. I think it's so complex. It's not just about the time spent away, and I'm sure that that's definitely true, because a lot of men would think that even if we are not doing stuff together, I just want you to be there.
Of course.
Like, I want you to be there, right? Like,
yeah.
And it's okay for the man, it's accepted for the man to go, you know, the gentleman would say, I would go travel, you know, and I have to do all sorts of things, you know, I may have to take a call after dinner, but no, if God forbid, if the woman does that, you know, then it's like, this is the life we live in, this is it, you know, after dinner, she's back to her work.
And I think that is also so, like, society-driven. Like, what's acceptable for women, what's acceptable for men. And I think that most of the time, even if we just take your example of the death metal, we don't realize we're doing it. These are unconscious.
Yeah.
They are, like, drilled in us. And I definitely don't think men are to blame. Like, I don't think men are to blame in the workplace. I do not think it's their fault that there is a term coined for the fact that they fail up. Like when you were talking about, you tell the person working for you, like, Lola, go ahead. Like, if you fail, it's fine. I'm taking it on me. Women are worried about failing because we do not fail up. We don't get promoted up. We stay, or we lose our job. And men may not even realize that this is happening until you show them 75 examples. And then they'll say to you, oh my God, look at that. You know, they'll look at the data and they'll say, oh, that's terrible.
I didn't know that I was so biased towards female-fronted heavy metal bands until I saw it in front of me and I became a female-fronted. If I have that bias and I'm a woman, imagine, like you can't really put that blame on men, right? So it's really, we need to look at this from many, many different points of view. And sometimes it does require some people, you know, people think like maybe I'm an extreme example of the way that I tackle these things. And I don't necessarily think that everybody has to make the sacrifices, you know, and be as extreme and like work the way I do. But some people, we do need people like that too, you know. So I'm definitely not saying that my lifestyle is the good lifestyle. You know, I actually have a segment in my book, which is called Career Fear, and it's about the future of work. And in it, I talk about work-life blend in response to work-life balance. And, you know, I'm like, I don't have work-life balance. I have work-life blend. That's my balance. It works for me. I'm so single-minded in that sense. You know, I'm like, it's my way or the highway. If I'm with people, you know, in relationships and things like that, look, this is my life goal. This is what I want to do. If you can't work with it, then we can't be together. And it is heartbreaking and difficult and all that stuff. But look, someone has to go that far.
And that's fine. If you will find someone that does want to be with you, that supports those goals, that supports your ideas. And even if you don't, that's also fine.
And when you think about, you know, people like all of the male entrepreneurs that I really like or follow their work or whatever. Think about Bill Gates, you know, Elon Musk, even Gary Vaynerchuk. I don't know if you know him. Like Gary is amazing. I love Gary. They all have amazingly supporting wives or partners or girlfriends or whatever. They've all got these amazingly supportive females behind them, supporting them and enabling them. Finding men doing the same thing for women, I find that in general is much, statistically, is much, much lower. So you kind of have to accept as a female, if that's the route that you're going to go, then, you know, it's a much smaller pool of, you know, potential partners that are going to tick all of your boxes, you know, and be able to support you the way that, you know, because society is designed this way. It's not designed to, you know, maybe for future generations it will change. And maybe by then we will have AI partners.
AI partners, that would be great, actually. I say that every year.
You know, I could design so that I could design my own partner.
Every year that someone says AI is taking over, I'm like, look, I still can't get like a fully AI assistant. AI is not taking over yet. I'm waiting for that day. I'm like, yes. Come. But I love what you said about work-life blend, because that's my whole philosophy, especially like at the school. One of the things that we drill into everyone is that it's learn, work, play. Because I think that work-life balance, and I don't know who did it, but that has set back women by 100 years, not just decades, literally 100 years. It's unbelievable whoever coined that term, and the fact that it took off, and the fact that everyone is always parroting work-life balance. It's impossible because you have to work. So I don't understand how you can balance work and life when it's part of your life. Like it's you can't do it.
After my breakup, I was like, I will take a look at dating sites. People were like, okay, so me, you look like you, because I had a little description, it's quite funny. Maybe I say it in one of my podcasts when I feel more comfortable in the future. But basically, like, I've got this description. It's like, I'm like this, and this is what it is. And it's like, don't even start a conversation with me if you can't take this. And especially, you know, when you come out of a breakup, you're like so, like, angry and upset or whatever, you know, and you're like, you know, this is my terms, you know. And then people were like, so how about work-life balance? And I responded saying, I have none. And then some people were like, good luck then. It's like, yes, good luck to you.
Of course, it's both ways. It's like, you cannot win. Because if you are a woman that has children, you can't win. You're made to feel guilty at home and guilty at work. If you're a woman that doesn't have children, you can't win. You're made to feel guilty at home and you're made to feel guilty at work.
So it's just a
terrible misnomer for women, but also whatever it has done to the last three generations of people, that it sets up work to be bad. Like, work is only bad if it's hurting you or it's not something that you're committed to. But instead, we start from an early age of childhood to view work as an oppressive thing to us. Instead of like, oh, work, I love my work, right? Like,
I love my
work.
It wakes
me up in the morning and it's so exciting and there's so many things to work on and I get a sense of accomplishment from completing things and learning new things. But we've done this to generations of people, of drilling into them work-life balance. It's like, what does that even mean? And if you ask someone, what does that mean to you? They don't know. Because there's no, this is what work-life balance should look like, because it's not possible. But but even if what should a happy life look like? Or what should a balanced, if we just want to use the word balance, like what should balance life look like?
Kobe, before we bring the conversation to an end, in the conference you had only 3 minutes, and I'm sure there were a lot more things that you could have said and talked about. So what are some of the things that maybe you feel like you can expand on from the points that you brought up in the conference? People love that format of the 3 minute thing, and they're like, it's so exciting because you get all these different points of views, but at the same time, we really want to hear more. Can you maybe share a little bit more and break down what you discussed?
We kind of cover off in the beginning. I didn't get to talk about in the 3 minutes where I see women being stuck because, right, I say they do more with less, but because they have to, like not because they want to. I do think it becomes so interesting once women get to the point of hiring. Once they have moved that way, that they're doing the evaluations and they're hiring people, they have come from a place where they've been raised and programmed that you must be qualified. So you have this vast amount of women in business, technology, medical, across the board. You could ask any of them and they will all report to you a story of, you know, how they were stuck, how they were overlooked. So it's a story that every woman has. And then the nice part out of that would be finding where those patterns emerge of how did they get out of being stuck. The advice that I give to executive teams is I tell them, look at your, because I was saying in the conference, what I do is I first figure out what do I know, and then where's my opportunity. I advise them, if you look and you see you have a woman that has been delivering to the bottom line, she's growing your business consistently year over year, but for some reason she hasn't been promoted, that's where you should be looking internally first, because that's an underutilized woman. And I'm not the only one that says this. Like McKinsey does the Women in Work report every year, and they just rolled out another one. They coined the term the broken rung. You know, we can't get women into those managerial positions, so we no longer have a glass ceiling, right? We're just dealing with, they're like hanging on. They can't get up. It's broken. They can't even get to the ladder. Forget, climb the ladder. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that it's even more so when you are dealing with people of color. So if you're dealing with women of color, those rates are so much lower. If you have 100 men that are promoted, 52 of them are going to be Black women. So if you're cutting the data set and you keep cutting it, so you have 72 of them are women. 100 men get promoted, 72 women get promoted. You definitely want to look, and you want to see, I guess, if you're also a hiring manager and you're looking at a woman's resume and she has an MBA and she's been in this field for 15 years, but she hasn't moved past a certain job description that should have been maybe in her first 5 years. That's your diamond in the rough. That's the woman you want to find and you want to hire and you want to pull over. So if you're a scale-up company, that's who you want to look for. Those people haven't been given the opportunity, and for whatever reason, they didn't have anyone at the top that was willing to pull them up. And usually it's because men are at the top, and they may not think, like, how do I look for these underutilized women?
Women, yes. Yeah, so we actually have a client who has just left her job in a very large airline, like one of the most famous airlines, I will not mention now, but she was preparing her resume for other jobs, and she was putting that she was looking for more like managerial things, and I was like, you've got 20 years of experience. At one point you have managed 1500 air hostesses, right? And it's like, why are you not applying for director roles? Why are you still looking for manager roles? And she was like, I don't know.
Right.
You know, like I was like, you should not take anything less than a directorship role. You've done this for 20 years. And I think like that's partly, so yes, the woman is maybe being overlooked, but also the woman has to actually ask for.
And I think that's the structure that's not there. I feel very fortunate and very lucky because I've always had at every position, every job, every company, every client, I've had incredible sponsorship from women and men. The part that's funny is if any of them hear this and hear me thank them, the men get a little offended. They're like, oh yeah. They're like, really? Why are you thanking me? Why are you thanking me for helping you? Like, you're awesome. You deserve this. You did this, this, this. And they go on and on. They don't like it. The women are like, you're welcome. You know, like, but it's really interesting because it kind of always goes back to that, like, are you qualified? Are you not qualified? And I think the men don't like that I say that I'm lucky because they feel like I deserve it, which of course I do deserve it. The reason that I feel that I'm lucky is I also know 10 other women that deserved it that didn't get it. Exactly. That's perspective, right? That's something that they can never know because it's something they don't see. There's also like words. It's kind of how we kicked off when you're saying, what are those words that are used about women and men? Is when you're getting your bonus, say, and you're making sure you're ticking off all the boxes to get your bonus. You know, most women don't get their full bonus compared to how many men get their full bonus. But that is all about language. So lots of times you'll hear, this is another thing I advise, like, if you work in a company and there's a woman who does incredible work, the reviews come back on her that say she's not polished. That's usually a term they use for women. They don't use it for men. I would look and say two things, like, well, one, is it possible that this position, because she's grown your account business 200% every year, like, is it possible that position should not be polished? Like, why is she growing this so much? And why are you not promoting her? Because she's not polished. Like, what does that mean? What do those words mean? And they're usually code. They're just code for, like, what you were saying, well, she's, you know, she's too aggressive for a woman, which we would never say about a man. I had one of my, he wasn't even my boss, he was an executive VP. And at one point early in my career, he said, you need big brand experience. Like, you need it and you need it now. And I wasn't thinking that, right? I was thinking like, oh, I'm making great strides. I love this work I'm doing. They're small brands, but I'm really great at it. He was thinking from day one about his career, and he shared that with me. He's like, what's your trajectory? Where do you want to be in 5 years, 10 years? You know, think bigger. If you don't get this now, you won't be able to get those bigger jobs later.
I think it would be amazing if you have a little mini course on femtalent, sharing that language with people, right? What is that language? I think we need to teach that, helping women refine the language that they use to ask for what they deserve.
If you deserve it, and I think women become the gatekeepers in the exact same manner. We've been conditioned that you must be qualified, you must be this, you must be that, you must be this, and this is how we moved up. Everyone at the top is speaking that same language, like whether they're men or women, because they've made it to the top. Yeah, I would love to do a mini course on like, how do you ask?
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be great.
Thank you, Kobe. It's been amazing and it's been great to talk to you. You really kind of broke up a little bit of the things that you talked about in the conference, and I'm sure we will have you back on the panel again. There are so many opportunities to interact with other women in this community we're building, and it's like, if we don't help each other, who else is going to?
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for creating this and believing in this. And I guess one thing I want to leave you with on your personal front is I look at that as an opportunity. There are so, so, so many people out there for you to meet. And
yes,
the most awesome thing is you have this criteria.
So yes. Because I know, like, this is my terms. Yeah, exactly. And I do meet a lot of very interesting people. Like, at the moment, I'm working about 6.5 days a week. You know,
of course.
So like right now, I'm like so busy. But yeah, I still do meet interesting people, and I think I have a very clear vision of what I want and what I'm looking for. You know, and it's important for more women to have that, you know, clear vision and set their own terms.
I think it will become easier for you because you don't have to, like, you know, you don't have to go through 1,000 unqualified hello.
Exactly. One of the things that I have on my horizon is to create my own dating app. And the idea is that everybody has to have like a one, so I'm giving away my idea, but doesn't matter if somebody makes it, you know, I always say ideas are plenty, you know, execution is all that matters. So I'll share the idea. If somebody wants to take it and make it, okay. But I actually made a This is a funny story. Let me tell the story and then we will finish. So basically, I decided to make my own web page, and I made a 1 minute video, which is really funny. At some point, I will share it. But I made this 1 minute video where it's my pitch, and I say, this is who I am, and this is what I'm looking for. And then I say, like, if you think that this, that my approach is hilarious and like really funny and you're open to it, then great, we may have a chance because you have a sense of humor. If you think that this is just, you know, just nuts and what is this woman, then please let me show you the door. So I put it in a URL, and I thought, I shared it with, I was on Hinge, the dating app, and I was like, I shared it with a few people. Because people kept asking, you know, and I had to explain all of the things again. And I was like, it's like Groundhog Day. You have to just constantly repeat the whole thing again. So I was like, here's my URL, go there. And so it had the video, and then it had my frequently asked questions, and it had my own algorithm. So I was like, so the video said, so if you've come this far and you've read my frequently asked questions, I was like, I value your time as much as mine. Now you can do the quiz. So the idea is that it would take 5 minutes to qualify to see if you match me, right? And because there's no dating app that does that, you know, they're all quite canned. So the idea was that this is my criteria, you know, like, it's because on dating apps, there's like, people sometimes don't take seriously the questions that they have. So for example, there's a question, what are you looking for? And a lot of people say, I'm looking for my keys. Like, you know, like, I like, can you please not waste my time? Yeah. So I was like, you know, so, and I shared this on Hinge. I shared this with 10 people and I shared it with about 14 people. And within 4 hours, 9 of them filled out my form. And I was like, I'm onto something. And then I got banned.
Really?
I got banned. Yeah, and now I'm banned from Hinge.
Did they tell you why?
It looked like a competition.
It looked like a
I was trying to save time for myself, right? If you genuinely were interested in somebody, you would take 5 minutes to watch their 1 minute video, read their frequently asked questions, and do their quiz.
Definitely.
Right? And if you've done all of that, then we have a starting point to have a conversation.
I think two things. I think one, that's brilliant for a dating app, so definitely make it. And I think it's brilliant for an HR, a hiring app. I'm one of the only people that do that, like, throughout my career, where you have to interview, but then you have to, like, you have to do a quiz. You have to do a test. You have to do something that proves that you really have these skills instead of just telling me that you do. And I consistently get better workers because I have these, like, 3-point things, because it's not good for anyone if it's not a good fit, you know, like, it's not good for me and it's not good for the person that wants this job. So what you described, like, if there was that would be, like, every company would use that.
I do your quiz, you do my quiz. So I know whether your company is suitable for me and whether I'm a good fit for your company.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's like, so
do I even want to work for you?
Yeah, do I even want to? Because, you know, everyone asks that question, like, oh, what's the company culture like? Like, you can't really describe that, but you could test it.
My biggest value is speed. If you don't work fast, you're not here. Look at the speed with which we built this movement in the past few months. Basically, one morning I was having a shower, Tuesday morning, I was thinking about it. By Thursday afternoon, the video was done, edited, all the animation was done. We built the web page. By Friday afternoon, I was already
sending it out.
I was already banned.
Oh, you were already banned.
I was banned.
You're already banned.
Already banned.
Maybe it's the dating app. It's not the hiring app. You know, maybe the dating app is first, because people are struggling out here. And that is a real way to make a connection. And
that's right. Yeah. The issue with dating apps is that it does need a lot of money for advertising, because you're competing with Match.com, you know, and they own several big platforms, you know, like Hinge, which I got banned on. You know? So for me to compete on that level, I can make the app, but I need a lot of advertising money to build that.
Yeah.
And then I've also had people commenting on when I said, you know, I said that the think tank is always going to be free, but later on we will have premium features, because that's the way to
stay alive.
Let's say, for example, you give your time to create a mini course, but eventually you need to make money from it. So the platform needs to be making money so that I can pay people so that we can bring in better talent.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right? And I think that is an interesting point that you were making, that sometimes when women do it, they're everywhere. They're like the free,
yes,
you know, yeah, networking events or whatever they are, nonprofit. But it does a couple of things it's like devaluing your time.
Yeah, and we are already doing the conferences for free. Yeah. You know, like there are many, many conferences for women that you pay a lot of money to go to. We are already doing the conferences for free, and that's the social enterprise
side
of it.
And that's important. That's so important. That's the ideas,
that's important,
right?
Yes.
That's the exchange
exactly.
of ideas.
But the ideas need to be executed, and for that you need money.
Yeah, exactly. You'll also be able to, because of how quickly you're growing, how fast you're doing everything, I think you will be able to get a lot of corporate sponsorship. This, I'm telling you, it's something that all the companies are struggling with. You know they have a perception problem. They know they have a diversity problem. They know they have a women problem. And they don't know how to solve it right now. And if you have spent all of this time and this energy to pre-qualify, right? We're always talking about how qualified women have to be. you've pre-qualified.
Yeah, yeah. And the next step is I want to build an AI. I'm giving away all of the plans here.
It's okay. You don't have to hear this
But
part.
It's okay, yeah. Honestly, I'm somebody that I always give away so much of the data, everything we learn. I just think like there's not much value in the ideas, because like those ideas are good within the framework of what we are building, right? So the idea is that, so I want to build an AI chatbot that will help women with, like, let's say, for example, you want to create a video to present yourself and talent, right? I don't have, and we are never going to have enough individual people that are going to be able to take you through it and coach you. But if you have an AI chatbot that's going to talk you through it, now make sure that you're got this much distance from the camera, that you know your sound is like that, you know, test it. So like make it like really fail-proof so that people can record themselves, make their 1 minute pitch videos, and make sure that they are like really coming across really well on camera so that they can share their talent and showcase their talent and what they've got, and really like have a way of changing their language using, you know, with the help of AI, because otherwise we're not going to have enough which is ironic. I mean, I was going to say we're not going to have enough manpower, but the truth is, it's ironic. So many people are losing jobs. But the truth is, there's just not enough money to pay so many people to do that personally.
And that's the, right, like what you just described is using technology to make something better. And that those types of things of it's essentially the pre-recording checklist, but to have that done in a way that a human can hear and use, mm-hmm, is much better than not being able to afford to pay a person to do that every single time then have the product not work. You know, like the product being their video.
Yeah.
It's like, if the video is not interesting, no one's going to watch it. They're not going to get funded. So I think like that idea is how we use technology in a way that benefits all. It doesn't really, you're not cutting a job because no one would ever pay anyone to do that. So you're really elevating something that has been, that's an innovation, right? Like that's, you asked me in the beginning, you know, how do you get into innovation or what are they? It's like, okay, how do we improve this thing? That's pretty much like how you end up in innovation, is you're constantly thinking, how do we make it better for our user? And like, how do we improve this and what's missing? You know, where are our opportunities?
The idea is that there will be this AI chatbot that will talk to you, you know, that will help you understand where you are right now, the way you think about money and how you can think about it because we need to raise women's socioeconomic status.
Yes, yes. Right? When you get to this point, you have to call me. I want to help you in whatever way in our journey. Like as women, we get to a point in our career, in our lives that we are seeing what's happening around us. So part of this is not like about women, it's kind of became about women. It's not my job, but it's my executive pledge. So I took an executive pledge to, I speak to 10 women's organizations throughout the year and to like large group events. And I go in and I speak about money, whether it's helping them understand how to manage a P&L within their own business or their own lives. Because what you were just talking about, what you were describing, that conversation does not happen enough. It doesn't happen as a child. It doesn't happen throughout your career. And those are things that I, again, have been very fortunate to learn because of the men that took the time to tell me, like, no, your time's worth more than that. And thankfully, like, the women that would have those money conversations with me, because in society, it's frowned upon. And I think, like, what sets us back more than anything else is that women aren't allowed to talk about money, shouldn't know about money, shouldn't ask about money.
Yeah, that's bullshit. No, we're going to change that. Yeah. Let's say 10% of people who subscribe to the movement and then the initiative, they then unsubscribe because they think, oh, she's just building her list, or like she's just building. It's like, if we don't have a community, if you don't have big numbers, we're not going to make a change. This, like, what is the point of having 200 of us talking among ourselves, right? And people talk a lot about the fact that women don't have enough of a network. There you go, you're my network now. But how would this network have happened that somebody that I didn't know until 2 months ago has now been on my panel, and now we're having this conversation, and you're telling me, when that happens, tell me, I want to come and help, right? This is how you create a network, right? And we just need to kind of
harness those women out there, you know, that are kind of alone and wanting these same things, you know, but they don't know where to go or what will do it. That's why I just give you so much credit with what you're doing, because it needs to happen, and it hasn't happened yet in a way that's actionable. You know, we have a lot of things and I think every woman that you will have on here has volunteered her time, is trying to come up with the best way to give back, which in business we would never do without like a clear, like, what's our KPI, what's our motivation, what's the ROI. We would never do that. But because there's this like just a vacuum, or there's, we just know we need to help, right? Like,
how do we help? Me, you know, like you think about when I started this, like, I've already invested so much money and time and my team and everything into this. But why am I doing it? It's because for me, money is a byproduct. I already have a successful business. I don't need a lot of things because, you know, I'm passionate about what I'm doing. I do want to make billions because I want to make a statement, you know, because there isn't enough of a, because when I'm looking at role models that I've had in business, there's not a single one female. I do want to make it because money is the thing that gives you options to make change. Yes. You know, it's the thing that allows you, you know, why should we only have male entrepreneurs having spaceships?
Right.
I want to make my own spaceship. Like, why not? Like, why? Maybe if we have females thinking about, you know, going to other planets, maybe we will have a different approach. Maybe we will think of it differently. You know, maybe Elon Musk, I'm not saying, like, I love Elon Musk. I think he's amazing. As a result of the movement that we are creating, is that in that position, makes it to that point, that has those options, you know, then maybe they would do something that will complement what Elon Musk is doing, you know, that would do, so that brings a different perspective. Maybe Musk would never think of it that way because he's a man, right? So we do need other perspective. That's what I'm looking at. You know, otherwise, you know, I'm a mortal human being. You know, like, how much money do I need? I'm not going to have children. Who am I going to leave the money to? When I die, all the money is going to go to science and technology and growth and, you know, helping. My biggest passion in life is to find other young people, not just young, but you know, generally people who come from underprivileged backgrounds like I did and grew up with nothing, and find those talented ones that are hungry and help them. Help them become the next Steve Jobs. It's not that I'm only helping women or It's not that I don't have anything against other about
no,
men, you know. And people do ask me, is this open to other genders and you know, non-binary? Absolutely, it is open. You know, but it happens that I'm a woman, and I understand women's
exactly.
problems. You know,
yeah.
Right. And that's right. why I'm passionate about that, and I'm doing what I can because there are 54% of us.
Yes.
on the planet.
Exactly.
Right? And we live longer.
And we live longer
allegedly. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that we have a better quality of life.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more on the horizon that I haven't yet had time to unpack and explain to people. My life only began in 2015 when I became a British
wow.
citizen. I've had only 5 years. Like this is like, I've lived only 5 years,
yeah.
really. Because I didn't live before then. You know, I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't do anything, right? So within 5 years, this is where I am now. And if you can be part of that journey and help me, you know, let's do this shit together.
Yeah.
You know, let's
go
break things.
I love it.
All right,
yeah,
thank you, Chloe.
It's
been amazing
to talk
talking
to you too. And really, as you're going along, I'm happy to be a resource to you because I do know
absolutely.
Like,
I would
what
love
it's
that.
Like, and I know how hard you're working. So. And I can send you
thank you
a bunch of things that have been working for us too. So
sure.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You
we'll talk
thank
soon.
Thank you, Kobe. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Kobe Flynn. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe on iTunes or Spotify and YouTube, or connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Instagram.